Hi, this is Savannah.
And this is Brian from the Dorky Diva Show.
And you're listening to Star Wars,
the best place for below average Star Wars.
In a world where people need 80s and 90s movie reviews, two regular Geordies combine forces to bring you the Brother to Brother 80s and 90s Movie Review Podcast. Check them out on Twitter, YouTube, and all decent podcast vendors.
Hello there, and welcome to The Star Wars Show, the best place for below average Star Wars. I am the Geordie Jedi Pete.
I am Jason Hondo-Ling.
And I'm Kat Wisiałka.
And we are back with a brand new episode of Star Wars, where we're going to deep dive into this brand spanking new Vanity Fair sort of deep article about Lucasfilm, about Star Wars, about the prep work that's gone in to these latest projects and about where the future's going. It's an in-depth article that we haven't had, sort of Lucasfilm's throwing the secrecy out the window. Hope that continues for the Hasbro figures. Let's have Hasbro make figures in time for the TV shows, please. You know, as we speak every week about things and we talk about how the secrecy can hinder things, but this seems to be a change in direction from Lucasfilm about what they're going to put out there marketing-wise, which is good. We've noticed a change in their social media presence lately where, you know, they're a lot more fun and outgoing. Seem to have more of a pulse on social media the past couple of months. And then they're doing the same here with this article, this marketing article. We're basically going to be talking about Star Wars. The Rebellion will be televised. That's the article name. It's the cover story for the June issue of Vanity Fair. It's written by Anthony Brisnican, and there's a lot of awesome photographs in the article by Annie Leibovitz, sorry about the start there, who has been taking Star Wars photos, you know, for the last 40 years. Kat, let's go straight to you. What was the sort of the first main point you took from this article? What were your thoughts on it?
Well, this is an incredibly exciting article. What really struck me was just how open Lucasfilm and particularly Kathleen Kennedy were being. There's sort of a shroud of secrecy around the Star Wars franchise. Everything's made in secret, and even what's upcoming is kept sort of really tightly under wraps. But this was a very open interview, and it was, you know, it was nice to see that, you know, Kathleen Kennedy sort of felt comfortable enough to talk about sort of the future of Star Wars. It's sort of it's reassuring because she kept emphasizing the fact that there's a roadmap and there's a plan. And I think that's something that has been lacking in perhaps the sequels a bit, is there wasn't that planning. That sort of impacted the story. Yet, for the future of Star Wars and current Star Wars, there's clearly a plan, and it's exciting because Star Wars has always been connected. Every trilogy is connected, but now it's sort of every story is connected, and we're getting this metaverse, which is in the similar sort of direction as what Marvel have been doing for over a decade now with the multiverse. So seeing this much information about Star Wars in one go is so rare outside of Celebration. And to have this massive amount of information before a Celebration at the end of the month is just really exciting. And it's just tantalizing so much of what's to come.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think they picked the perfect time. I think this interview was conducted around March time. Obviously, they've released it now, just a few weeks out from Star Wars Celebration, when sort of Star Wars news and chatter's starting to get very fever pitch. You know, we've just had two trailers for Kenobi, and the Kenobi press tour is ongoing, started at the beginning of the week, ongoing now. So sort of Star Wars is everywhere once again, and then they've dropped this article sort of just in time to sort of really sort of grab the headlines. I think something in the article that I didn't quite agree with was from the writer himself, sort of saying that Rian Johnson, you know, decided to take the script for Last Jedi in different directions and cut off some of J.J. Abrams' story points. When I think, you know, for those who don't know, the script for The Last Jedi was locked in before The Force Awakens came out. J.J. himself had read the script. J.J. produced the movie, The Last Jedi, and he liked the script and liked the movie. So I think sort of to paint it the way the writers painted it, I think it's a little bit incorrect, a little bit misdirect. So I just wanted to get that done off the bat there. Wasn't the case of, you know, The Rise of Skywalker, episode 9 was called Duel of Fates, totally different movie, and then they've brought in different writers. I think it's good that Kathleen's sort of saying, you know, we're looking to have, you know, sort of a roadmap, a foundation of where we're going. I think that can only be for the best. It means you avoid things like having to change one entire movie to another, like what happened with The Rise of Skywalker. So yeah, I think only good things can come of that. One other comment was sort of saying, you know, they learned with, you know, Solo perhaps that, you know, to be careful about legacy characters and recasting. I think a lot of chatter online is going to say Kathleen Kennedy and Lucasfilm have said we will no longer recast legacy characters, and that's not quite what you're saying. I think what you're saying is that, you know, they need to look at it, they make sure it's the right fit, the right project, and also that the project is marketed correctly. I think, you know, there's a lot of issues with Solo that, you know, we weren't just down to the casting.
I mean, Solo had to compete with Infinity War, and, you know, Marvel fans are just as massive as Star Wars fans. So, you know, it was never going to do as well because of the timing it was released.
Well, this is what I've said today, sort of on Twitter. I've said, you know, problem with Solo was the marketing, the timing. The problem you had was that the Marvel marketing was fantastic. The Solo marketing, you know, they had some good stuff at Denny's restaurants in America, some good gifts, but the mainstream marketing was awful, wasn't almost non-existent. You know, I think Marvel caters for not just Marvel fans, but also the general movie-going audience or into Marvel movies, more so than our Star Wars. And I think, you know, that movie probably should have been, came out at Christmas, like December time, when, you know, that's the current Star Wars plan was what I had been, you know, after people used to a Star Wars movie in December, so they should have done that. Marketed better, and like I said, I think you would have seen Star Wars break even, Solo break even, Solo make some money, and then, like, you wouldn't be having this conversation about how casting ruined the movie, because, you know, I don't think casting had anything to do with the performance of the movie. So yeah, but obviously, I think, you know, in this article, not in any article is any producer going to break down, you know, the reasons why a movie failed. I think she's just saying we need to be careful with what we're doing with legacy characters, which I think they do need to be careful, but there's also room there to do lots of legacy characters as long as you're doing the right things. But a lot of outlets, including Collider, which I was very surprised about, are sort of saying that she just sort of threw Solo under the bus and threw casting legacy characters, like recasting them under the bus, and it's like, that's not the case at all. That really is sort of pouring petrol on something and setting it on fire. I think, you know, we've just got Obi-Wan Kenobi coming back to screens this month, who is a recast. Ahsoka's coming to screens, who is a recast. Do you know what I mean? The recasts are right there in front of our eyes. Big part of Andor, who is in these pictures, the lovely pictures that have been taken with this article, is Mon Mothma, a recast. So, you know, the facts are right there that Lucasfilm is in fact doing recasts still, and as long as they're doing it right, it's going to be great. Jason, what's your thoughts on sort of all that, what's been said?
Yeah, no, I think what you said is dead on. It's the usual thing of people grab a bit of an article and run with it without putting it into the context that it should be in. Rightly so. I think there's a place for recasting as long as it's done right. You know, for me, a classic example is that, you know, the character of Luke Skywalker, there's loads of stuff they can do with him, which they've started to do with both The Mandalorian and The Book of Boba Fett. And, you know, you've got an actor like Mark Hamill that has openly said, I would happily guide someone who wants to play the character if I feel they're the right fit. So to shut the door on it, I don't think it's the right thing to do. And I don't think that's, like you said, that isn't what Kathleen Kennedy said. But it's the usual thing. You know, once an article like this goes out, people grab bits and put it out into what they want people to go with. But overall, this article was, for me, really interesting. You know, the way it broke down. Interesting about Solo, because I also read a bit of an article by Ron Howard, where he was talking about Solo and the respect that he had for the previous directors that he took over from and the story that they'd done. You know, he very much said he came into it with their blessing because they couldn't agree with Lucasfilm what was going on, and he took it over from there. But, you know, I've also been reading another article about Marvel by the Russo brothers, talking about how they've worked with Marvel whilst other directors can't, because they've been open to adjusting the story to fit what Marvel wanted to achieve. Now we're in the days of where these big studios, it's not like you're making a film for one film. You know, we're now seeing, like, Star Wars, there's a continuing arc. The stories go, although they go off in different areas, they're all tying in together. And the same with the Marvel Universe. So, you know, directors in some way have got to respect that it may be their film, but it's the universe that they're making the film for. And if they can't respect that, then they're not going to fit in as a director for that franchise.
Definitely. And I think, you know, Kathy goes on to say in the article about, you know, it's not a case of you coming in and shooting something for a couple of months and then doing post-production and getting it out within a year, year and a half. It's like, you know, you come in, you know, you're working on development of the project. You then move on to production of the project, and then we do post-production. Then we sort of put it out, and it could be a five-year process, which I think, you know, is right. I think Kathy said, you know, the most perfect experience she's had since took over the company was with Rian Johnson. Just, you know, everything clicked with him. There was no arguments. They loved his script. They loved the way, they loved to the final cut of the movie he handed in. You know, it was almost like a perfect synergy between the studio and him. So yeah, I think, you know, people do need to come in and be open. I think in the article as well, she talks about how sort of Dave Filoni and John Favreau sort of put together, as they both had sort of awesome ideas on a similar object, similar thing, Mandalorians, lone gunslingers, but had sort of slightly different ideas on how they came together and actually sort of bonded and, you know, make each other better, push each other, educate each other to sort of push these stories even further, which I think is another great opportunity of people working together to sort of push things forward. Sort of, you know, I think the talk in the article about John Favreau's, you know, he brought up the idea of the child and how problematic that is. You know, you're bringing in a Yoda species, and how does that work? And it came from the Jedi Temple. How does that work? And then you've got someone like Dave Filoni who, you know, if that idea is possible, he will be able to figure that out. And it probably took a long time, but he was able to, you know, put together the visual where it is like, okay, we're going to show a flashback of the child in the Jedi Temple, the clones coming in. He knows about that part of Star Wars history. You know, you can make that fit and make sense without being sort of a shoo-in. I just hope that, you know, they're talking a lot here about sort of working together and sort of, you know, setting the foundations going forward. And I think, you know, if you go back to Mandalorian Season 1, certain directors on that project, you know, Deborah Chow came in, did an episode. She's now, you know, she's overseeing this Obi-Wan Kenobi show. Someone who they obviously liked working with. I think that's what's great about these shows, is that, you know, if someone comes in, does an episode in sort of that that connection's there, and that sort of fluid working's there, and the relationships there between them and the studio, then I think there's opportunities to bring them in for more. So, you know, Deborah Chow, who, you know, is world renowned for directing, she's came in and been on this Kenobi show now, you know, for a few years. And she's can't probably give up other projects to do that, but, you know, she's been willing to do that. I think that's what's really, really good about it. Kat, what's the next point that you took from the article?
The next point we took is sort of what we've been talking about, is about these legacy characters and how much thinking and consideration has to go into who to bring into a series and why. And Kathleen stressed that when Deborah Chow was writing the Kenobi series and they were considering bringing Vader in, it was the why. You know, what could Vader's presence bring to the story? It wasn't just the fact that, oh, Vader is cool, let's put him in here, it will attract more viewers. It had to make sense for the story. And the interview pointed out that originally Vader wasn't planned for the Kenobi show, and that Hayden's return was something that Deborah Chow herself wanted to do and which she pushed for. She sees, you know, the relationship between Obi-Wan and Anakin, you know, as this brotherly bond, and that, you know, Obi-Wan can't just give up on him. And this sort of rematch is Obi-Wan not giving up on Anakin, even though he's become Vader. You know, at this point, Obi-Wan thinks that Anakin is dead. He thinks he killed him. So Obi-Wan obviously has a lot of guilt. So to realize that Vader is Anakin, you know, that's going to present a lot of moral questions to Obi-Wan, and he's not going to just give up on Anakin. So the amount of time, effort, and thought that's clearly gone into putting Vader into this show actually has eased a lot of my worries about sort of this this rematch that's been hinted at for such a long time, because fans don't want it to undermine the ending of Revenge of the Sith. You know, we thought that was the end of Obi-Wan and Anakin, and fans also don't want it getting in the way of A New Hope, when Vader says, "When I left you, I was but the learner. Now I am the master." Yet this interview stresses just how carefully they had to think about putting Vader, a legacy character, into a show. And that clearly goes the same for a character like the child, not a legacy character, but a legacy species. So there's a lot to balance there, because the essential part of Yoda actually is his mystery, and you don't want to reveal too much about that. And sort of bringing in like characters like Ahsoka, they take planning as well, because she has so much backstory. So it's a consideration for these legacy characters that is really important for the story writers. And I found that a very interesting part of this interview.
Jason, what were your sort of thoughts on sort of that point and the legacy characters and sort of the care and the, you know, the thought process that goes into bringing them back or not?
Yeah, no, it's something that I know has been discussed quite a lot in the past, in like the gallery and that. And I know for a fact that Dave Filoni was obviously quite standoffish to begin with the idea of messing with Yoda, because I know it was something that George had always said, you know, we don't say where Yoda's from and all this. But the way that they dealt with it and the way they created the character, it's good that they're taking that much care and protecting the legacy of those characters. Likewise, you know, Up until I have to say, up until the point that I read this article, I was still worried about the whole idea of Darth Vader being in this series. And then I listening to Kat there and reading what I've read, I sort of, yeah, it's the right thing to do, and it will actually sort of hopefully tie up almost a loose end as to, you know, how did Obi-Wan find out Darth was Anakin, and also, you know, bringing back Hayden Christensen to begin with. I thought, do they really need to? You know, it could be, normally it was a bigger actor with the James Earl Jones voice. And then in that Vanity Fair article, there's this amazing photograph that Annie Leibovitz has took of Hayden pairing for one of the duels with the Obi-Wan stunt double. And just by his stance, everything, he's not in costume, he's just got like a cape over him, but by the stance and the frame of his body, I can see the costume on him, and I can see him playing that character. And that in itself has sort of proved to me, this guy's done the work to, you know, he's played Anakin. It's his rightful place to go on and play Darth Vader, or a younger Darth Vader, because, you know, he's made the character his own. And obviously, I suspect, we haven't had clarification, I suspect they're going to use James Earl Jones's voice, unless they do a few scenes with the helmet off where he speaks. Who knows? But no, the way they're going about with the legacy characters, again, also they talk about the work that they did with Luke Skywalker. And I just think they really have worked hard to perfect that. So I think they're going in the right direction, definitely.
I would be so excited if there was actually a scene where Hayden had the mask off and he was talking to Obi-Wan, just like he does to Ahsoka in the season finale of Rebels season 3, because that would just, that would be heart-wrenching, and to have that sort of moment between the two would be epic cinema.
Definitely. I think, I imagine it will be James Earl Jones who's back with the voice. I imagine them won't announce that. I imagine it'll just happen in the episode. I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Kat, when you talk about season 2 finale, Twilight of the Apprentice of Rebels, you know, where you have James Earl Jones voicing Vader. Then you have the moment where sort of the mask is slit, and it's sort of a, you know, half and half, like some Vader talk, some you hear Anakin's voice come through. And if we have, it is absolutely tragic. And if we have the same again, you know, where, yeah, you know, the mask's compromised in some way or comes off entirely, who knows? Never know, maybe imagine if Vader sort of took the mask off to say, look at what you've done to my face.
Oh my gosh, my heart.
Like almost if he does it to sort of, because he knows it's going to make Obi-Wan, you know, emotional. So what if he actually goes, look at my face. Look at these hands that aren't real. These legs aren't real. Look at my face. You made this monster. You made this Sith Lord, which we all know is sort of not true. But physically, you could say, maybe it is true. And Kenobi's definitely going to blame himself for it anyway. So by doing that, it would just pour the tragedy on. Do you know what I mean? But I think definitely, again, I think, you know, the way Dave Filoni used Vader in Rebels, almost like The Undertaker in wrestling, like less is more. You don't need to have loads of Vader. He's that much of a huge presence that if you sprinkle him in the right places with the right story, he just hits massively. So I think, again, you know, I think he's going to be looming over the show, but we're not, I think we're hardly going to see him in, you know, every episode. But I think, again, sort of use right, less is more, and it's more meaningful that way. And obviously, Jason, you were saying that photo of Hayden sort of practicing with the Obi-Wan Kenobi stunt double, sort of with the cape on. It you know, it does look absolutely, you know, he looks menacing, looks fantastic. You really do feel that presence. Kat, do you have a favourite photo from the photos in the Vanity Fair magazine?
I think my favorite has to be the shot of Genevieve O'Reilly as Mon Mothma. She looked absolutely stunning as the senator. And it's the first time that we've really had sort of concrete proof that Mon Mothma's story is going to be a big part of Andor. They say in the interview, actually, that it's sort of been, it's split between Cassian Andor and Mon Mothma. And she's a character that I really love and want to see more of. So that photo of her as Genevieve O'Reilly as Mon Mothma in a senatorial gown that is sort of the perfect mix of her prequels appearance coming up to her sort of Return of the Jedi appearance. I just love that photo.
Yes, it is. It is wonderful. I'm not quite sure which photo was my best. I just loved all the photos, sort of behind the scenes, look at the characters, some of the characters back in costume. I think you're right, Genevieve O'Reilly's Mon Mothma costume does look very grand, very Chandrila-esque. Kenobi, obviously Obi-Wan, donning the clothes. Obviously, there's a video, behind the scenes video that's gone online where you can see why he's wearing the hoods, because he's actually, you know, he's back on set just for the photo shoot, and he's actually cut his hair. Which I thought was really, really cool. I think the picture from the front cover of obviously Mando, Obi-Wan, Ahsoka, and Andor is obviously, you know, that's almost like this phase one of television's biggest stars going forward. So, you know, I thought that was really cool. Yeah, I just thought absolutely fantastic. Speaking of sort of, you know, the whole articles about the future of Star Wars being sort of in television. She talks a bit in the article about movies. You know, the next movie probably is going to be Taika Waititi's movie, written by Christy Wilson-Cairns, the writer of 1917. That's probably going to arrive first. We don't know what that's about. And then obviously Rogue Squadron, which has been produced and directed by Patty Jenkins, coming after. I'm glad there's no sort of time frame on them. You know, again, let's let the creative juices flow. Let's give these projects the time they need. You know, I think, you know, if you think about it, from 2015 to 2019, Lucasfilm's production company were churning a movie out every year, a blockbuster caliber movie every year. And like that can be tiring and can be hard to keep an eye on, to be that prolific for that amount of time in Hollywood. You know, George would do, you know, one Star Wars movie every 3 years and then have like a 10-year gap between trilogies. So I think the fact that, you know, this television's in place, you know, the fact they've developed this, you know, essentially effects in camera system, what George was hoping to design when he had the company, but he just didn't have the budget for it at the time. You know, money and technology's caught up now, and we've got this, I've got the name of it now, but
the volume?
The volume, yeah, obviously, which is essentially effects in camera, you know, allows them to produce these TV shows and movies like really, really well, without having to sort of logistically move too much, which I think is great. So yeah, I'm glad the movies got a chance to breathe. I'm glad these TV shows are coming together quite naturally, which is good, and have this sort of roadmap planned in. There's a bit in there where Kenny talks about sort of hesitant to use the word trilogies, talking about Star Wars being a more persistent storytelling tool. And Star Wars has always been persistent storytelling because, yes, we had the original trilogy, you know, and then we had the prequel trilogy, but we always had books and comics in between that tied things in. So it was always sort of a giant sort of universe of story, with sort of these trilogies as starting points, I would say, or entry points, you could say. So yeah, I think obviously, you know, things aren't looking good for Rian Johnson's trilogy. I think at the end of the day, Rian Johnson is a very busy man. I think his Knives Out movie was a big deal. You know, Academy Award nominated for the script, made a lot of money at the box office, critically acclaimed. So obviously, just wrap production on number two, I think. I think he's got a Netflix deal in as well, making multiple more now, like 3 to 4. So, but you know how much he loves Star Wars, how much he loves storytelling, and you know he'll have that story there. So I imagine he will be back for a Star Wars project at some point, just when the time is right. And again, as it says in the article, these things, and Ryan knows, considering he did The Last Jedi, you know, you come in and it could be like a 4 to 5 year process. So he's going to do that when that's right for him, where he knows he can give that his all. And I think that's the right way to do it. What was the next point you had up, Kat?
Oh, so the next point is the Vanity Fair interview gave a little bit more information about Leslie Headland's The Acolyte, which is another upcoming Disney Plus show. So we know we've known for quite a while that it was going to be set well before the Skywalker saga, but this interview has confirmed it's going to be set at the end of the High Republic era. Now, this is a really big deal. And for Star Wars fans who haven't been keeping up with the literature, which is no particular problem, you don't have to be immersed in everything to understand Star Wars. It does help, but the High Republic has been a huge literature phase since 2021, and it started with Charles Soule's The Light of the Jedi. And it's set 250 years before The Phantom Menace, at what is known as sort of the golden era of the Jedi and the Republic. So this is dealing with completely new characters. It's not tied into the Skywalker saga in any way. The only sort of character who has appeared within it that fans would know is Yoda, because Yoda species has an amazing lifespan, but again, because he's a legacy character, he only appears when the time is right for him. So to have this confirmation that the Acolyte is going to be sort of set within this era is really exciting, because it can directly link to this literature phase that's ongoing. And it's also giving sort of a bit more free rein to the story, because it's literally linked to nothing except the literature.
Yeah, I think I was really excited about Acolyte anyway, about, you know, this hopefully this like dark side mythology getting told, lore getting told. High Republic, you know, I'm only two books in. And, you know, because I'm a slow reader, as everybody who listens knows. But, you know, I have loved it, this new era I've been in. And I've got the other books to read, and I am reading them. So to have this show announced as sort of going to come on the back end of that era, again, it's like, makes us want to read those books even more, because I'm enjoying them. And I know I'm going to get an even bigger payoff when I couldn't watch The Acolyte, which was something I was already excited for anyway. So it's like two things coming together to sort of in perfect harmony. Jason, what's your thoughts on sort of The Acolyte and where it's set and what we're going to get from it?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing something a little bit different. Obviously, pre-Skywalker, but still very much with the Jedi and the Sith. And I like that. I was reading, I think in the article they were talking about how they've been able to play with the Jedi. And the Jedi are more cleaner, almost in uniforms with white and gold robes. And, you know, it sounds like they're aiming for a different Jedi to what we're used to. And then obviously we'll see how they end up, hopefully, where we end up finding them in, like, The Phantom Menace. So there's so much potential there. You know, everyone loves the stories of the idea of the Jedi and the Sith, this good and bad, and this magical force. And then obviously there's also the greyer elements of the good and the bad together. That's sort of almost a swear word to the Jedi. And obviously, you know, there's the rule of two. And yet we've seen with, like, the Inquisitors, there are still these darker Jedi, which is something that I suspect that would come into, obviously, the Acolyte and everything. So all in all, it's a series that, you know, they're drip feeding us information about it, and I think it's building it up to something more to look forward to. I'm beginning to think, and also comments that have been made by, like, Pedro Pascal and that, I've got a feeling the Mandalorian's going to start winding down to a natural sort of you know, it's not going to go on forever. I don't think we're going to see a second season of Book of Boba Fett. I think that's going to be a one-shot deal. So, you know, there's still a lot to look forward to, you know, and, you know, what this Taika Waititi film, could this be going in the sequel's direction? You know, or again, we don't know what his idea is. So The Acolyte is definitely something that I'm looking forward to, because it's a time frame we're not used to, which means it'll bring a newness. But obviously, they've still got to stay true to Star Wars.
I think newness is also very important, because fans are always finding Star Wars for the first time. You know, there are kids who will be growing up with these Disney Plus programs, perhaps, instead of the movies. So to have new characters for them, I think, is very important, because, so, you know, everybody's got their Star Wars characters. Like, I sort of grew up on the sequels, so to me, the sequel characters are extra special. Whereas if you were to ask, you know, somebody who was a child from the 80s, the original trilogy characters are special. But now, if you were to ask somebody, you know, a child here in the 2020s, they might be starting to talk about Ahsoka and The Mandalorian. So it's very important to have these new characters for new fans to connect to, and to help move away from the legacy characters and the Skywalker saga, because those characters can't continue forever. They do need eventually to be replaced by new characters. And now is the time to start doing it.
Definitely. I think here's the thing, you know, if every decade you have a new set of characters, those characters become legendary. So you almost have, you know, legendary legacy characters on a wheel, and it'll keep flowing. And, you know, each generation will have their own legend, which I think is important in what Star Wars has always done. It's funny about, you know, legacy characters and generational. Obviously, you know, Hugh McGregor, big part of huge part of the prequel era. It turns out his wife, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, has joined the cast of Ahsoka. So, you know, that could be Hugh and Mary's child will have sort of a dad who was a legacy character in the prequel era. And, you know, we don't know who Mary Elizabeth Winstead will be playing in the Ahsoka series, but a link to Star Wars in the now, which I think is pretty cool. I think, you know, we haven't really spoke about Andor much. Shall we go into that, Kat? Do you want to tell us sort of what you got out of the article to do with Andor? I think one of the most exciting things I read in the article was how we're going to get Andor and his sort of story arc, but also we're going to get more Mothma's arc and how those two characters sort of come together. I thought it was very exciting.
Definitely. I mean, I feel sorry, but that, yeah, we completely sort of skimmed over Andor, even though that's probably the main part of this article. So Andor is upcoming. I think it's supposed to be coming out later this year, and it's going to be focusing on Diego Luna's Cassian Andor from Rogue One. I think, you know, his character did make a big impact in that film, especially with that sacrifice he makes at the end. So this is going back to, how do we get to a character who's willing to sacrifice himself for the rebellion? That's sort of the question that this series is going to be posing. And Cassian is going to find himself forced to move from planet to planet to try and escape the radicalization and imperialism of the Empire. So it's going to be the building blocks of his wanting to rebel. And then at the same time, yes, we're going to be getting Mon Mothma's arc. So I'm assuming that the series might be something like a 50-50 split between the two of them. And, you know, she's still the senator of Chandrila for this time, even though, you know, the Imperial Senate doesn't have particularly much power because of Palpatine. but you know, she's still a political figure. So it's how does she set up this rebellion in a clandestine way without getting caught? So it's really going back to the building blocks for the rebellion, which has been sort of mentioned a bit in Ahsoka by E.K. Johnston. We've seen it in Star Wars Rebels, but now we're seeing it with like a really big player of Mon Mothma, and of course, you know, Andor is this very important character. We know the important part he's going to play, and it's seeing how his character develops to that, which I think is going to be really interesting because we know where his story ends.
We do indeed. It's this sort of, you know, Andor's a man who, without being under the influence of anything, gives his life for a greater cause, knowingly. You know, in that moment of Rogue One, that's what he does with him and Jyn Erso. So we're going to see how this guy goes from being a child greatly affected by the Clone Wars to, you know, being part of a separatist world, you know, deciding to fight for the rebellion and believing it so much that he will ultimately give his life for it. And might not start there, but we're going to see him go towards that while seeing Mon Mothma sort of start, you know, the early process of challenging the Empire, and how do we go about changing this evil dictatorship, one-party state government that's only got itself and sort of the elite in mind and not the rest of the people of the galaxy. I've said it before and I'll say it again, I think Andor could be like the sleeper show. You know, I think, you know, Kenobi, Ahsoka, you know, Boba Fett, Mandalorian, all sort of big characters. I think Andor sort of be on the back burner for a while, like not getting talked about much, but to me, I think that could be the greatest series of them all. I think could be Cassian Andor. And I think I'm really excited for Andor and where it's going to go. It's had a huge shoot, loads of locations. It's going to be massive. And I think I'm really excited to see the series as it unfolds. Jason, sort of what's your thoughts on the Andor-ness of this article and the Andor series coming up?
I absolutely loved reading the beginning part of this article where Diego Luna talked about, obviously, where he was sat in the taxi trying not to mention Star Wars. And again, that just highlighted the secrecy that the actors realise. And later on in the article, obviously, Rosario Dawson completely counteracted that with how she's been so open, it's got her into trouble with Disney just a couple of times. But yeah, no, Andor's a series that I've been looking forward to for quite a while. And I know I've been reading recently that it's gone from, originally it was going to be 6 seasons and now it's down to 3, which, you know, maybe they're going for the trilogy arc again. And it's something that I found quite interesting because, like you've said yourselves there, with the idea of it being Cassian's journey, obviously when they originally announced this, it was announced that it was going to be both Diego Luna and Alan Tudyk. And obviously he's not been in this first season, which sort of stands true to me because I think we need to see the Cassian Andor character first. And I'm hoping that season 2 is then going to bring us this meeting where he's going to meet, obviously, K2SO, and then obviously go on to the third season where we can see the two of them, you know, now that they've bonded, going off on their adventures together. So that's the sort of natural progression I'm hoping for. Whether I've got a grasp of it, I don't know, but it would make sense to me from a storytelling point of view. And obviously, again, the idea of this, learning more about the character of Mon Mothma and where she was to where we get to see her in, obviously, the original trilogy. And, you know, it's a character that popped up all over the place and has a deep, deep history in Star Wars. So it's nice now to see that it looks like she's going to get some serious screen time and we'll be able to explore that character that's already quite loved by all of the fans.
Kat, is there anything else from the article that we need to discuss?
I mean, that's sort of the main bones of the article. And, you know, if people are interested in what we're talking about, please do go and read the article and go and read the extended Q&A with Kathleen Kennedy, because it really is fascinating to read. And I think probably the best place to end this is my favourite quote from the article. Kathleen said, "Star Wars is one story." And I think that's probably the most perfect way to describe the galaxy far, far away.
Definitely. I think it's hit the nail on the head. I think the way that sentence is structured, I think, you know, all of Star Wars, it's one story. You can intertwine in many different areas. You can start in different areas and work your way forward or backwards, or you can go backwards and forwards. But the story is accessible for everyone. And like I said, you can jump in and then explore the whole story, or you can just jump in and explore the part of the story you want to explore. And it's totally up to yourself, and I love that about it. I think some of the other things that were mentioned was sort of the John Watts, obviously director of the Spider-Man movies over at sort of Marvel/Sony, is sort of looking into doing something. Lucasfilm obviously in development. Obviously, you know, there's been lots of things in development that haven't been mentioned in this article, because as we all know, they'll be developing so many ideas, but again, only so many of them will actually get greenlit in the end. Things that were missing from the article was the movie that Kevin Feige is producing, which I think now has a writer, and the writer's been talking about writing it this week. Again, you know, it's a movie that's in development, doesn't mean it's going to get greenlit. You'd like to think with someone's caliber of Kevin Feige, you know, working on it, it will get greenlit, but again, it's a case of, you know, it could be 5 or 8 years down the line, the movie. I don't think the in development series for Young Lando was mentioned either. Again, a series that's in development, but, you know, may or may not get greenlit in the end. Was there any projects, Kat, that you think I've missed that weren't mentioned in the article that have been mentioned in the past?
Not particularly. I think they're saving most of that for Celebration. I think the only mention was that there was one. I think it's got a code name at the moment, which might be the one that the Star Wars Homecoming writer is doing. And that's apparently set post Return of the Jedi, but focusing on child characters. So not the legacy characters.
Jason, what's your thoughts on sort of what we've been speaking about there?
Yeah, no, the one you're talking about there is Grammar Rodeo.
That's which is the one.
It's been codenamed after a Simpsons episode. Which is quite interesting, because they're describing it as a galactic version of classic Amblin coming-of-age adventure films of the 80s.
I would say that all of Star Wars is coming-of-age adventures.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that one sounds quite interesting. The fact that there's already a casting call out just goes to show that how far forward that one is. So it'll be quite interesting to see. Something that we sort of touched on earlier, there's one bit in this whole article that I really liked, and that's because it's the techie behind-the-scenes geek in me. It was where they talked about the volume, or stagecraft, as they call it, which obviously was innovated by Jon Favreau and ILM and, you know, all the guys that work behind the scenes. And as Bryce Dallas Howard pointed out, is actually inspired by an idea that George Lucas has always sort of subscribed to, that one day you'd be able to film in your backyard using technology. And it was quite interesting where they said they were still right up to the last minute worried about whether it was going to work. And then it wasn't until James Cameron came in to watch a bit that they'd shot, and he had to take his glasses off and stare at the screen because he was trying to see if he could see what was fake and what wasn't real. I thought that was a lovely story of how, you know, Disney, Lucasfilm have always innovated and they continue to do so. And I think that just goes to show how important they as a company, and also how important the Star Wars saga is to filmmaking in general. You know, we now see like the likes of Batman, or the Batman using the technology that was really first tried out here. And it is going to be a big change, especially since COVID, you know, the way that things can be filmed. So all in all, this article for me has really whetted my appetite for more and more stuff to come. Definitely that Grammar Rodeo, I'm definitely going to be interested in seeing what that's about. To me, it feels like it's more aimed at younger children. I think this is almost Disney and Lucasfilm going down the Ewok route and the Endor films that they did post Return of the Jedi. So it'd be interesting to see what they've come up with.
Let's hope more people watch them than watch those ones. Otherwise, I might have a couple of more duds on my hands. Kat, which of all the TV shows and projects mentioned, which are you most looking forward to and why?
I have to say Ahsoka, because she's my second favourite Star Wars character. And I think the story is definitely going to be picking up on Rebel Season 4's ending. It's hinted at, you know, in Season 2 of The Mandalorian, that she's still after Grand Admiral Thrawn. So I think it's definitely got to be that one, because there is so much there that they could do. And I want the Chiss Ascendancy in live action. I can't wait to see more of Ahsoka in live action. I want Sabine in live action. There's so much I want from that series. And with Dave Filoni at the helm, I just know it's going to be incredible.
Jason, what's yours?
I have to say Ahsoka's the one that I'm dying for, because being a huge Rebels fan, as everyone knows, and a huge fan of what Ashley Eckstein did through Clone Wars and Rebels creating the character, it's something. And also, I have no problem with the way Rosario Dawson portrays the character either. I think they made the right call there. As much as I love Ashley, I just think that was the right call to go for. I'm really looking forward to that. The tease that we got this week with the chair and the hat and everything, just, you know, pleased to see that moving forward. Also, obviously, you know, we've got, it looks like, I suspect Mando's going to land exactly the same time as Book of Boba Fett did last year. So I think that's going to be the end of this year, right into the beginning of next year, which also fits with previous series of Mando anyway. I believe we're going to see Andor in September. That would fit then with the scheduling for everything else. And whether we see Bad Batch after Andor, I don't think it'll come before, will be interesting. That's a series that noticeably they didn't go into much, but obviously that's animated. But it is still quite a large part of the whole story that they're running with at the moment. You know, there's quite a lot in there. And also, you know, we've sort of seen that the end of the Bad Batch looks like it ties in quite nicely with what's been going on in Mandalorian. So it could be interesting to see everything that's coming out, but definitely the one that I can't wait for, but obviously got to wait until next year, is going to be Ahsoka. And I think Ahsoka will probably fall around the same time as, well, I'd like to say as Obi-Wan is this year, but it might fall into the Andor slot next year. But it'll be, we've got so much to come at the moment. It's an exciting time to be a fan of Star Wars.
As I've been saying since Disney bought the company, we're now living in the golden age of Star Wars. Star Wars will live forever now. There'll be new projects constantly, and it will dart between eras. To begin with, it was sort of, we're sticking to this sequel era, but now a sequel trilogy's done. You know, we're darting off to High Republic. We're darting off to, this in between sort of the original trilogy and the sequel trilogy. We're back telling Kenobi stories. That's sort of in the prequel era, nearly into the original trilogy era. It truly is the golden age of the Star Wars. So it's never been a better time to be a Star Wars fan. Jason, have you been buying any Star Wars merchandise recently?
No, my bank balance at the moment is... actually, I was gifted some nice Star Wars merchandise. I've got I have been lucky enough. My flat is about to be decorated. I've actually sat here with a giant Force Awakens Stormtrooper framed picture, which is a really nice piece of artwork. And I've also got a Darth Vader and Stormtrooper framed picture, two slightly more A4 sized ones. They'll be going up on the wall. So I was quite lucky to be gifted those. But at the moment, I'm being very good, trying to behave myself. But Lego keep bringing out so many kits. It's just, I haven't got enough room for them all. So I'm actually thinking about selling some of my other Lego to make room for Star Wars. But all in all, no, I haven't got anything at the moment. I'm hoping I might get a few gifts tomorrow, but we will see.
Kat, same question to you. Any recently new Star Wars purchases or any new merch that you've got on show?
No, not particularly at the moment. All the Black Series figures I fancy are coming out next year, and LEGO Star Wars reveals have not been taking my fancy whatsoever. The next LEGO I'm after actually is Baby Groot.
I'm sort of waiting to see what we're going to be getting sort of at Celebration from Hasbro Black Series wise as the exclusives, because I haven't actually seen that published yet. Obviously, I'm not going to Celebration, but I will be reaching out to try and get one. I think, as mentioned last episode, I'm about to sell my house. So I think, once that's all said and done, it could be months away, and these things can take time. I think once we get our new house, I think I'm going to treat myself to a helmet. I don't have a helmet in my collection, and I've heard good things about the Black Series line of helmets, so I'm thinking about getting myself a helmet to go in the Detolf and go on display. I think that wraps it up for the episode. Kat, have you got any closing thoughts?
It's just been wonderful, really, just to have so much information about Star Wars, what's upcoming, and to have this little glimpse inside the workings of Lucasfilm at the moment.
And yourself, Jason, any closing arguments or thoughts?
No, I can only echo really what you and Kat have said there. It's a lot of exciting information coming out, and it's nice to see that Lucasfilm are opening up on what's going on, which sort of knocks on the head some of the rumour mills that you hear. But no, still plenty to talk about, as always.
Definitely. And for those who are interested, obviously at the beginning of the month, I attended Star Wars Fan Fun Day at Blackburn's Ewood Park. There is an article I wrote for that, or I reviewed the event. It was a great event, which is up at Jedi News. So check that out on their website. Kat, where can the people find you on social media?
You can find me at Kat Kylo on Twitter. Always happy to talk Star Wars and anything Kylo Ren.
And yourself, Jason?
as always, at Hondo Ling, pretty much there, and also at Jason Ling Photography is my other one, if you want to have a look at some of the photos that I'm starting to put up as well.
Yep, obviously Jason, as you know, is venturing out to his own business. He started Jason Ling Photography. Definitely check it out. I think you lots of different events. You can do sort of weddings, proms, people in costume. You could probably do cosplay photo shoots, advertising photo shoots for businesses. I imagine you can do it all, Jason. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm hoping I'm going to be getting out a bit more doing the conventions, probably covering more for Jedi News guys. And I really want to, I enjoy playing around with the photos. So also any cosplayers that want to reach out, I'm more than happy to have a go at doing some nice artwork. And I also have all my own printing facility as well, so I can always do that for you guys at the same time.
There we go, the full shebang over at Jason Ling Photography. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Jolly Jedi Pete. You can find the podcast on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at Star Wars Podcast. And you can find the podcast on Twitter at Boars Star. If you are listening to this podcast on Apple Music or on Spotify, there is a feature where you can leave us a review. Please leave us a top review, 5-star review, nice little comment. Just helps other people find the podcast and helps us book guests for the show. If you're listening on one of the many other places you can get podcasts and there's a review feature, again, please, if you don't mind, just leave us a top review. Again, it just helps us out. It's something you can do for free that supports the show. But that's all from me. May the force be with everybody. And remember, always tell that to Kanja Club.